It's time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
We have a lot going on in the area of developments within the mortgage industry. Changes are coming, and we've invited back Barrett Burns, President and CEO of VantageScore Solutions. Barrett was on and a guest of ours on May 6th, and we just really started getting into talking about VantageScore. We got to know Barrett a little bit, found out that he's a 25-year veteran. Well, he's a longer veteran than that than the mortgage industry, but he's been with the big brands for 25 years, places like Citi and Ford. But he was having lunch with a scoring consultant back in March of 2006, and the guy mentioned about how the three bureaus back then were starting a new scoring company, and Barrett went back to the office, and the phone rang, interestingly, and someone says, "Hey, do you know anything about, you know, this VantageScore?" He says, "How interesting. I just had lunch with the guy, told me about it." And so the short of the story is he interviewed for the job. They said he's perfect for the company, and they hired him. So VantageScore has been led by Barrett Burns for all this time, and I'm really excited to get into it. Here's the reason why it's so important. I've been getting all these phone calls from these consultant. Well, I'm part of GLG. It's called Gerson Learman Consultant and Group, as well as other scores, and they're all calling and saying, "Dave, are you aware of some of the latest statistics on how VantageScore is growing up?" And I go, "I see Barrett at the conferences, but I was unaware of how the statistics are picking up." So when I heard that, I said, we got to get Barrett back on. So I want you to go listen to the May 6th podcast. In there, we talked a little bit about how consumer credit is changing and the need for the bureaus to adjust, so they formed this new entity. And one of the things that's most interesting, well, let's just get into it with Barrett right away, and I've got a few things I want to cover with you, Barrett, right out of the gate. But Barrett, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for the invitation. And when are we going to have barbecue? That sounds great.
That is good. Oh, I'd love to share it. And Andy and I have found a real, really good barbecue spot right here close to where we both live. Yeah, when you were on this last time, back in May, we talked about how the three credit bureaus put three people from each company in a room. You said in that podcast, they were told, don't come out until you have a new model that is more consistent across all the bureaus, that positively scores more consumers, that's underscoring it, and more accurately scores them. And in that, I pressed into, what do you mean by more accurate? He says, it doesn't let consumers overborrow. It doesn't let lenders overlend. So I really got interested in that. And we started talking about the two primary groups that are going to be impacted this. And it was millennials and Latinos, because VantageScore looks back over 24 months, whereas FICO looks back over 6 months. The common denominator that's between millennials and Latinos is they don't use credit all the time. So the longer look back that VantageScore does gives them an advantage, and it could open up credit for as many as, if I have the notes right, 40 to 45 million more consumers can be into it, of which 10 million are going to be coming into the housing market here soon. So a lot of information. Go back to that podcast. Did I get any of my notes wrong from listening on my flight back last night from being gone? Is that pretty accurate, or you want to amend that?
No, just add Latinos to the group that borrows in frequently and often cannot get a conventional score. So Latinos, African-Americans, and millennials.
Okay, good. So what's really interesting is that as the younger generation comes into there, it is one of the common denominators for whether the millennial, Latino, or Black, it sounds like, is they're becoming more infrequent, or they are infrequent users of credit. And yeah, that's one of the advantages. So let's really start there. And then I want to get into, why has there been such an interest in VantageScore? So talk a little bit more about the demographics and expand on that, if you could, Barrett.
Well, I should say that in 2013, we rebuilt the model because new data was becoming available and new mathematical techniques were proving to be highly accurate. So we rebuilt the model in 2013, and that's when our adoption really took off to this past year's 12.3 billion scores, with a pretty heavy concentration in credit card, because in the last model, VantageScore 4.0, we included trended data, which gives a snapshot of when somebody's starting to either improve their credit score or their credit behaviors, resulting in a better score, or they're going the other way. And so a lender can see a trend versus a snapshot point in time. So that, and then we use machine learning on the thin file consumers, which gave us about 18,000 additional attributes to score. So the predictiveness increased, and which, you know, machine learning has been around for a long time, but didn't have the computing, you know, firepower to really make it work until recently. So those are two additions, trended data and machine learning, that we added to the 4.0 that really gave us a ton of lift, both in terms of predictive characteristics and scoring more people. So that's attractive to high-volume lenders, either marketplace lenders or credit card lenders. They can detect a trend very quickly on, you know, should they offer somebody more credit or not. And so the demographics are really playing into that. The housing sector, I'm sure you've seen all the statistics about how the average borrower is going to change to people of color rather dramatically over the next 10 years. And so the lending systems just need to, you know, be more reflective without adding risk to the system, but be more reflective of who the average borrower is rapidly becoming.
One of the things that's most interesting about the statistics that I heard from these investment bankers that were calling me and asking me for my thoughts about this, how I saw this affecting, was the fact that the thin files and how it is going to change, or it is changing things, that the fact that these groups of millennials are infrequent users, or like my oldest daughter, who just doesn't use credit much. And she is struggling a little bit. I mean, she got a great credit score, but because she doesn't have much and of the right makeup, she's feeling a little bit on the outside looking in. Whereas our youngest daughter studied it. She got in on it early and is getting lots of things that hopefully won't get her in trouble. But anyway, talk a little bit about that. And then, by the way, I want to put Alice, Joe, Andy, and Alan on notice. We're going to get around to them right after this. But it's really fascinating to me, Barrett, how the 10 million new consumers, but we have the problem with agencies. So talk about thin file, and then what's the status with the agencies, then we'll get over to Alice.
Yeah, so the 10 million, about 2.4 of those 10 million, we scored 10 million more people to 620 and above, and 2.4 million of those are African Americans and Latinos, again, because they borrow differently. We also did a major study on, so how do thin file consumers perform? And lo and behold, on a large database, we found that consumers with thin files perform almost identically to consumers that have thick files. And, you know, years ago when we were in the consumer lending businesses, we said, well, anybody that doesn't have three credit trades, you know, must not be good credit. That's just the way it was back then. And that kind of just prevailed. I mean, I remember that as being, you know, around consumer lending for so many years. Yeah, three trades sounds right. Let's go with that. And then a number of lenders like Freddie do have a restriction on less than three credit trades. Well, we're proving that that's not the case anymore, that people with less than three trades can be highly predictive and therefore have more access to mainstream credit.
Well, now that is changing a little bit with Freddie, is it not? Hasn't there been some movement there of the three, of the two primary GSEs?
There may be. I haven't heard of it lately, but yeah, it may be, and I hope it would, because they're probably finding the same thing that you can rely on, along with the other underwriting criteria, not relying on the score alone.
So, Alice, as you listen to this and help guide where Union Home is going, what are your thoughts?
I've been following this all along, Barrett. So, this is great to see that this is now something that the industry will have access to. But that's really probably our next big hurdle, right, is how do we get that the agencies actually do adopt it? Don't they have to go through a study process? And I'd love your insight into when you think we'll actually be able to have this score be more mainstream.
So you're referring to the rule that conforms with the law, and we're very happy about that. So model developers will be able to apply next year by April. And the agencies or the FHFA and the agencies are putting together their application process now. They're supposed to finish that by the end of December. And the way Mark Calabria is working, you know, he's very structured, very process oriented. That's what they said they were going to do, and that's what I'm sure they're going to do, is have that application process ready by the end of December. Then the way the rule goes is applications have to be put in by April. And then there's a 12 to 24 month business assessment and model assessment period. And we're fine with that. The reason we are is, after all, it's the biggest asset class in the world, and they need to get it right. So we're fine with that long assessment process. Got to get it done right. So, and FICO has to reapply too, or apply. So it puts all of us on an equal footing. So that will be the rollout of it. Now, we are doing pilots with lenders to get them kind of first, you know, first adopters, and get them ready. So there's nothing precluding a pilot.
Thank you,
Joe.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people got hurt during the Great Recession. So over the last 10 years or so, and you know, you mentioned so many people going have a thin file. Can somebody that's been in trouble with a prior mortgage, or you know, been through a foreclosure even, recover using thin file credit?
Yes. So we also did a study on that. The question being, particularly from credit counselors, how fast can somebody get back up to a prime credit score, you know, assuming no bankruptcy, but even with a foreclosure? And it can take anywhere a minimum of 9 months to a year and a half to get back to a prime score, even with thin files, because the value of that data slowly expires over time. Now, while that foreclosure may still be on the credit report for up to, you know, 7 years, the predictiveness of that data expires slowly over that time period, because we want to score the most recent behaviors. So assuming, even if somebody gets modifications, which then improves the credit score because now they're current, and we say to credit counselors, teach people how to improve their score, because they can get back to a prime score, you know, assuming they've got the job back or they're employed and so forth, and don't let them lose hope. So, yes, yeah, they can get back within 9 months to a year and a half.
Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor, you touched on some of the difficulties of implementing this, or change generally.
Well, hey, Barrett, thanks for joining. Well, I'm going to ask a question, and hopefully it's down the fairway. So Joe and I both in particular have been in the realm of capital markets for a long time, and back into the 80s. And one of the things that you measure is performance of portfolio, and that leads to mortgage-backed security behavior, and the PSA, Public Securities Association, measures prepayment speeds, and part of the prepayment speed is driven by default characteristics. And so we've got decades and decades and decades of portfolio performance metrics driven from mostly FICO, at least in the last 15 years. So how will the new Vantage score affect mortgage-backed security performance when we don't have the decades of performance data to demonstrate the reliability of the default performance? Is that an okay question?
Oh, of course. Yeah. And so FICO will be applying probably with either FICO 08 or 09, because as you may know, the models that they use for mortgage acceptance are models that were built on data before the recession. So some of that data that was used in model development of what we call FICO 4, or some people call it classic FICO, is 20 years old. And FICO has been on stage with us saying they would prefer that those models be replaced. So the securities industry is going to face the same thing with either FICO or us. But we can, prepayment modeling organizations are beginning to get data from us that can go back 10 years for validations. And, you know, it's something that's the market's going to face, whichever, either with the newer FICO models or with us. But that's a very fair question on prepayment modeling. So the analysis needs to be done, and we're working with some of them to do that.
Part of the notion behind greater inclusion would probably lead to a higher default, you would think, simply because ratios are ratios. But it sounds like that's not necessarily the case. It's inclusion
no.
without increased delinquency or default, and that's right, correct?
Well, yeah, I mean, it goes to accuracy of the model. So last year, Oliver Wyman just finished their annual report on us, and so last year, 2,500 users used us and 2,200 financial institutions, including, 9 of the largest banks use us and 29 of the largest credit unions use us. So they wouldn't convert to a model that would give them, more defaults or higher rate of default, I guess I should say. They just wouldn't do it. It wouldn't make sense to broaden their reach and yet blow up their P&Ls. So I would say that's a rationale for saying you, with an accurate model, you could score more people without reducing standards. And,
perfect. Well, where were you when we had the push on CRA? You could have really helped make some decisions.
And I think I'm glad you raised that. So I think we can help solve the CRA issue by scoring more people, again, more accurately.
Exactly.
No lender is going to embed a model that is less accurate.
At least they wouldn't do it on purpose. Awesome. Thanks, Barrett. Appreciate it.
Yeah, great information. Alan, what questions do you have for our guest?
Yes, sir. So great to have you on the podcast, Barrett. What probably is ringing with a lot of people is, sounds good, I know I can use it, or my partners use it in, predictive or credit risk profile modeling. But how do I start leveraging it or use it, or how would I integrate with it? So maybe you could update our audience on the timeline of more adoption into VantageScore and how does it best integrate, or what's needed to integrate it, more broadly across our industry.
Well, our business model is that we license the models to the bureaus, and they sell them. They compete with each other to sell into the marketplace. So it starts with the bureau. We don't sell anything. We just develop models and promote the brand. And so it takes a while to get known in the marketplace and be tested. So I started the company in 2006, and really not until 2013 did it take off. And as I noted, last year we had 12.3 billion scores used, but none in the mortgage space because of the exclusion from Fannie and Freddie and FHFA until recently. So I think it takes time. It's a long sales cycle. We understand that. It requires a lot of testing, and it should. So I think it's, a step-by-step kind of thing. And a lot of lenders, on the lending side, want to see if somebody else is going to go first and then see how it works. And that's exactly what's been happening. On the investor side, I think it just takes time. The rating agencies, we know them all well. They all have told us that there's no enhancement or no penalty for using VantageScore in a securitization. They know us well. They've tested us. So that's step one into the securities side. And I think investors, it'll take time for investors to become familiar with it. A lot of large ones do use us for buy, sell, or hold decisions in their loan level data analysis. But that means you got to have a pretty big staff and some PhDs to know how to use the data. But my guess is that'll trickle down to the smaller investors. I think we put a paper out a couple years ago on the fallacy of using credit scores for analysis in MBS or any security, really. And you might think that's odd that a credit score developer would take that point of view, but we use two hypothetical cases, portfolios. You're having the same average score, and one had double the default rate of the other one because of the tails. So our message to the investor community is, boy, don't use an average credit score for your analysis, and don't use score at origination either, because risk with a score changes over time. but it really should be loan-level data, which is available now to analyze the underlying collateral and borrower underneath the security. All that takes time.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about, briefly touch on the Oliver Wyman study, if you could get into that, and then I want to go one last place real quickly. But
yeah, so we, for the first few years, everybody or people would ask us, well, yeah, but how much adoptions, who uses you and how much adoption? And since FICO had sued us for, just shut us down early, just after we started the company for antitrust, we don't get involved in the sales side because it could be either collusion or the appearance of collusion between the three companies. So we engage Oliver Wyman to survey the three bureaus on how many scores you use and by how many organizations. So, as I mentioned, 12.3 billion, that was this last year, and that's up 20% from the year before that. The four-year average growth rate's been 20%. So we're happy about that. Interesting, the day after our press release came out, National Mortgage News picked up some data that shocked us. The CEO of FICO, the FICO had been adamant about never releasing their scoring numbers. But at their July earnings call, a very enterprising equity analyst backed the CEO into the number. And he revealed that their last year's numbers were $14.5 billion. So we've been adding about $2 billion a year since 13. If that rate continues, we may be catching them in a year and a half. But he also said that their peak usage was $13.5 billion in 2007. That means they've only added $1 billion since 2007, and that shocked us.
Very interesting. Yeah.
And we noticed in the last, since then, in their boilerplate in their press releases, they claimed a 90% market share. They've dropped that phrase in their press releases. I don't know if it's still on the website or not, but because we don't track of that carefully. But so we're catching up to them faster than we thought, only because equity analyst got it out of them.
That's amazing. That's what really prompted all the phone calls from the investment bankers that were calling subject matter experts like myself, was to say, hey, we're noticing that, and their data includes the mortgage score, and your data does not. So if we were to add the mortgage score back into VantageScore, in fact, if VantageScore could be doing mortgage business, I mean, it's kind of like a no contest type thing. You guys have really done a heck of a job of taking out a potential competitor. I don't know if taking out's the right word, but where's the tipping point? When will this actually shift? Collabora is open. There's more discussion, more attention on it. And this data, latest data, certainly has got the investment bankers' attention.
Yeah, and a lot of independent mortgage bankers have really understand what we do. Union Home, for example, we know each other really well. They get what we do. And, for a mortgage banker, they can see where they could have more potential applicants, again, without lowering pricing or credit standards.
Yeah, when you can add 10 million new homeowners to the ranks of homeownership here in America, that's good all the way around. And whatever piece of it you can get lenders, you would do well. So VantageScore, where can they learn more? How can we get access to the reports? You've been very good to share those with me. I love that stuff. I'm writing on it more and more in publications, but how can others get a hold of this stuff, this information?
Well, the Oliver Wyman reports on our website, it goes into a lot of detail, and I think the National Mortgage News should be on there as well.
Good.
We put all that stuff on the website.
But you also publish a lot of reports and general information about what's going on. For those that are interested in studying credit trends, you have some of that available information available as well.
Yeah, all of us in our company are all former lenders. So we've sat in these seats before, on the buy side of scoring, and we've been in front of regulators, and we've been, in front of risk committees as careers. And it's on purpose that all of us, even our PhDs all come from companies like, GE Capital or the former GE Capital, and, Fifth Third and other companies.
Yeah.
We want the lender experience inside our company to understand what they need from a risk management standpoint, from a regulatory standpoint, and a marketing standpoint. So that's why we publish a lot of that research.
Very good. Folks, thank you. I mean, Barrett, thank you so much. Very excited about the progress you're making. I think it's really interesting where you're at. Folks, we've had as our guest Barrett Burns, President and CEO of VantageScore Solutions. Check out the website, and it is VantageScoreSolutions.com. Is that correct?
Correct, yep.
Very good. Barrett, thanks so much for being here with us. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Really appreciate it.
Folks, next week we've got Tony Moss joining Ted Tozier, the past president of Jenny May, joining us. He will be there. The two executives are going to be talking about where they see the housing market, what they see going on. They've got the Mayor Catalyst event that will be coming up in Dallas February 10th and through the 12th next year. And the theme of the 2020 conference is Entropy, Surviving in the New Abnormal. Seems like Tony and Ted have talked a lot about this in the past. They're predicting that almost 40% of the current lenders will not survive in the next 5 years. Tune in next week to learn how you can be one of the survivors. Listen to these two industry veterans. Appreciate them coming on. So don't miss next week. I want to say again a special thank you to our sponsors, Black Knight, Open Mortgage, Finastra, the MBA, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, the CMLA, as well as Velma, Knowledge Group, Vidyard Assist, and more vendors coming on. Want to become a sponsor? Check them out on our website. Check out the information. We got all of it up there. Or get a hold of Paul, whose contact information is on our website as well. Have a great week, everyone, and tell others about this podcast. That's how we've grown to such a large listening audience. And we thank you for it. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.